The only problem with this one is I don't think we have any outtakes. We're too professional.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't think so. I don't know if we have anything.
Damn it.
Damn them all. Hell.
Something to drink. I'm already just talking now. I haven't talked to anyone all day. My throats are killing just from talking to you now.
No sausage.
No sausage. I will not be told no sausage. I will.
Welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. Dead Zone is the sci-fi tabletop miniature skirmish game from Mantic Games. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Harper and Jack Fike. I am your announcer, William Randolph Wintergreen.
Welcome to the 84th episode of Dead Zone the Podcast for May 2018. In this episode, we have Winged Asar on to talk about the upcoming Mantic books. As always, you can go to deadzonegame.podbean.com to see all the pictures, or you can go to youtube.com/c/deadzonethepodcast for the video version of the show. And now on to the episode.
And welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. This is the illustrious episode 84, the one you've all been waiting for, the one that we've been hyping, the legend. 84. It's what we've all come to hear. And today we're going to soothe your ear holes with a bunch of Dead Zone news and a couple special guests.
Yes, your ear holes shall be soothed. Did you say soothed? I don't know about soothed.
Massaged.
It's gonna be special. Yes, we do have a little bit of news, but mostly we got a great interview with a couple of guys. We'll let you know who that is on the next segment. And then we got some of our stuff that we're going to look at and an update on the contest, I guess. That's about it. Should be a fun show. So we'll start with news. The biggest news, the real only news, is that Mantic's releasing a lot of their old metal miniatures back into stock. And we'll have the link to the actual page with all this metal made madness that they're starting here. And they do have quite a bit, and a lot of it's for sale, but there's a lot also in the Mantic points. So you can get, if you've been collecting some Mantic points, you might be able to get some of these for free. Well, I think you have to pay for shipping, but other than that, free-ish. So we'll get right into it.
Yeah, people have been like, oh, I wish Mantic points, like this has been a topic of concern very recently on the Discord, and a lot of people ironically, we're like, yeah, I wonder if or when they're going to switch it up. And, well, it's here.
Yes, we heard rumors about this at Adeptcon, I think, from maybe even Martin mentioned it, that they're going to be fixing up the point system to be a little bit more variety and stuff. So, yeah. These first ones, though, aren't for points. These are for cash money. And the first one is the Enforcer Captain and Peacekeeper Armor. It's the different sculpt than the regular one. And he's 10 pounds or $18, big metal miniature. Yeah, I guess I don't know if he was ever actually released. We only got the other version that we got. He's like more stocks up, right? This guy's got a little bit more combat stance. He's a much better looking miniature. Wouldn't you agree, Jack?
He's crouched over a bit more, a little more like a football player, ready to not huddle, but whatever line of skirmish, whatever that's called.
Yes, he's about to stab someone with a sword. That's a football move, right?
yes.
So that's cool. It's always good to get these old ones in. There's also a neat one of the Forge Father Huskarl, which I don't remember ever seeing before. He's got a stogie in his mouth and two like Gatling pistols, and he looks awesome.
I was going to ask if I'd ever seen him before or if it's the paint job. The paint job is amazing with the dark browns and when I saw the painted miniature, I was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It's a really neat sculpt. I don't remember ever seeing this guy. I don't know where he's from. If he looks too good to be the original Warpath. He might have come as might have been just some exclusive, retail exclusive maybe. But he's only 8 pounds or 9 pounds. Yeah, 8 pounds, sorry, or $13. So he's pretty cool. These metal miniatures are a bit more expensive because they are more exclusive. They make these not in China. They do them in-house, so you're going to get a little bit higher prices. But if you're missing any of them, it's the only way you're going to get them. And the next is the Marauder Warlord. We've seen this guy quite a bit. People seem to have this guy more than most. He's the one with his big claw up in the air, with his big jowly face. We've seen recently, I think we had somebody paint one of these up.
And yes. Yes.
So he's been around a lot more. I don't know if he was from the original Warpath, and I don't know if there was just a lot of these guys out there or what, but we seem to see him more often. And he's 10 pounds or $18. And once again, the paint job here is really cool. They use like all these brass and silvers and stuff. And even his big jowly face looks pretty good. Not a fan, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, but he doesn't have a 80s skipping rope cable along his back. So that's that's where he falls down, where the version we had showcased last episode, I think wins out just because of that.
Next is Chief Radgrad, I guess. He's a another orc, but he's got the orc leader's head with the flat cap, but he's on a ripper suit body. But it's a different ripper suit because it's got like a two flamers almost on one arm and a big jaws of life pincers on the other. So even just as get him just for a ripper suit, he's actually pretty awesome. As many people know, and we'll find out later, I'm not a fan of the orc heads, but this is a cool-looking ripper suit. I am a fan of the ripper suits. So that's neat. He's 10 pounds or $18. And next is a classic Sergeant Howlett, finally back in production with a three-point stance. And not much more to be said about this guy. He's been the three-up lately. They've had the statues for Adepticon, and they were giving them away at Mantic Open Day.
Right.
Now he's
right
back in his miniature form.
And I'm starting to think he must be cramping up because every time you see him, he's in that stance from the big trophies from Adepticon to the miniature to the cover art from the Mercenaries book that came out a couple months ago. Like he's just been
Jack, down. That's the Mandela world, remember? Different universe. You keep referencing the old universe. Oh. You gotta embrace the new universe, man.
It's confusing.
I know it is. You'll get used to it. Don't worry. Maybe your memories will fade and you'll just accept that. Did you know that in this world, Donald Trump's the president?
Oh God, no.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? I remember back in the old universe, it was Ronald McDonald, but.
Okay. Now you're mocking me and my apparent dementia. But anyways, yes, Sergeant Howlett, I think is one of those ones that's kind of iconic, and people will probably be using their Mantic points to snag him up.
Well, it's not Mantic points. These aren't Mantic points, Jack.
No, these are the ones you have to pay for. Speaking of which, any of them so far, have you decided you're going to have to break open those purse strings? I know that we don't have three of them.
We don't have Chief Radgrad. We don't have the Warlord. The one the Forge Father Huskarl is cool. He's the one. We do have enough Peacekeeper Captains. They look very similar. The next one is Akasusak. How do you say her name? The one, the plague.
Yeah, I always said Akasusak, but I was informed that that's speciesist and it's pronounced Kish, so.
Yes, I remember that miniature though is in the metal, was very delicate. She's up on one leg. Her axe is really thin. She's got a tail. Like, it's everything against her to be, in one piece.
the axe handle is thinner than probably the 3 mil. Like, well, if you're pinning a model, you would use something much thicker than an axe. And so far, the one we have is still holding on. But that axe head is so big, and I remember Rob was, oh, look, it's still together. And the axe head was like, ee, ee, yeah. It's on that parapet. It's going to go. It's going to go.
The metal fatigue is not its friend.
No.
And the last one's Etik Pamira, the Yindish leader with his crossbow. He's cool, too. We don't have him. So he's cool.
You're right, we don't. You had the Dreadball one. That's right. So that's four we don't have.
Yeah, so I don't know if the prices, it's a little expensive, but there's at least two that I'm interested in. It's the Huskarl and Etik Pamir there. So we'll see. They also have, these are the free point ones. They have a bunch of ones added to the Mantic points. Actually, I think if you go to the actual Mantic point area, they're not in there. It's only in this Metal May Madness section. So you have to go there if you're looking to get these guys. They have an alternate Tenor Go and dead models that dead zone models that they don't have pictures for. I wonder if the dead zone models are the old Mars Attacks ones. That's the only, I've never seen any dead zone. Or was there was a set though, I think, of all different types of dead. Now that I think about it, I don't know where it came from or why it happened, but it had like some dead models in it.
And I think they were Mars, different. Yeah, the Mars Attacks ones were in the red plastic and they looked sort of like the Gotham Police Department sprawled out on the ground there. But the why do I remember a...
Was that the alternate universe too? Yeah, I do remember like it had like a dead Zyndage or something, and there was a bunch of dead. I don't know if maybe I'm just remembering incorrectly. There is no picture, like we said, so we don't know yet. Tenor goes 15 points, and the dead models are 25 points, probably because you get a few. Generally, there's about 15 points for these guys for all these free ones. We do get an alternate Commander Roka, which is the Pathfinder. Is he a Pathfinder? Or is he, I don't know what his technical designation is. He's the hero from the Warpath book, First Strike. And this one has him aiming down his barrel. I don't remember if we have this one or we have a different one of him. I think the one we have, he has his gun up, if I'm not mistaken. He's not aiming down the barrel like this. But he looks like an enforcer, but he has an open faceplate. That's the only difference. And he's cool. And then there's Blaine from Warpath, the giant Blaine in the Peacekeeper armor, which dwarfs all the other Blaines. We have him. I've painted him up for sure.
Yep.
And then we got an alternate Ingolf Kretzerson and Pad, the guy and his dog. And I don't know why the alternate of this is. I'm not sure. But he's a different sculpt, supposedly, from the one you can buy. The picture they show is like a render of it, so I'm not even, that looks like the one we have, but I'm not sure if that's the actual one. And then we have a, alternate Hacker Halftail. This one, I always look at this one, he always looks like he has a football in his hand, but it's actually explosives. He's holding it in front of him.
Yeah, I believe that's we have that one.
Is this the one you have? Yeah, with the explosives in his hand?
He's got two, like they're two, I painted mine red, so I was just gonna say, hey, they're red, but obviously,
could be any color.
Yeah, they obviously could be any color. That was a heavy, because I think the other day when you were pawing through them all, you picked him up going, oh my God.
Yeah,
he's pretty, I remember that. Pretty heavy for his size.
Solid metal.
He's big boned.
Then we got Major Chard, which we definitely have this one from the GCPS with the, she's got her, she's pointing with her cap on. And then they have an alternate Subject 901, which, once again, I think this is the Kickstarter version that you have. It's the Weapon X-looking plague mm-hmm. guy. These are getting to the ones that I'm very interested in, because these are all from – I'm not sure where they're from, technically. The first one's called Mortis, and he's a plague, and he's in weird armor, and he's got like three eyes, and he's an old Warpath model, so I don't know where he came from, but he's pretty cool looking. And then there's the Veerman Progenitor, which is in the exact same pose as Mortis. So I don't know if they use the same body for him, but instead of like a hook thing he has on his arm, he has a drill, and he's got obviously a Veerman hat, and he's got a different arm with two guns. So it's the same body type, so I don't know where this came from, but I really like the Progenitor's head. He's got like a neat looking Veerman head on him. And the last one is the Forge Father Hero. It's a Forge Father with a hammer. He looks, and a gun actually. And he looks kind of like the Engineer one with his little eyepiece. And he's running though. He looks like he's running, which you never see Forge Fathers running. So that's a neat thing.
Because they can't.
They only waddle.
They cannot the double run. It's just a physical abnormality in their structure.
Poor little guys.
Yeah, I don't know the history of these last three, and it'd be interesting to know where they came out, because we hopped in on Dead Zone before the game, the Kickstarter had just started. So it's got to predate that. We would have seen.
Unless they're like retail exclusives. That's the only thing I can think of. I know for a lot of the Kickstarter stuff, they do retail exclusives to try to appease the retailers and have these alternate things. So that's it. I know Mortis, and I'm not sure the Vermin comes over, but the Mortis for sure was from, is a really old one. That's before we were playing. And, it must be from original Warpath or something. I'm not sure. Mm. Or maybe just some model they made back in the day.
But, and you might be right. That might be like a, hey, come to salute, and we have this sculpt or something. Yeah.
Yeah, they're coming from somewhere, but it's cool that they're releasing them now, especially for free for a lot of these ones, if you get the points. And a lot of us have lots of Mantic points, and so we're going to finally use some of them, I think. And, yeah, we might be ordering some of those other guys, too, because I do like that Huskarl, and we do not have Etic Pimera. And we don't have very many unique Reb guys. I think Rebs are our least represented group, amazingly. Even less than the Marauders, I think. Especially now, we got all the Marauder booster from Adepticon. So, yeah, poor Rebs get abandoned.
I'm just wondering if it's just a supply and demand situation where we only have so many because they only have so many available, or is it that we just couldn't be asked to get any?
Yeah, maybe a little A from a little B.
Yeah.
We also have some news about tournaments. If you do have any tournaments and you want to get the word out, let us know. You can email us at deadzonepodcast@gmail.com or tag us in a Facebook post or post on our Facebook somewhere in there, and we'll let everybody know. I also like it when people on Facebook invite me to these tournaments all over the place, because then I can know where they're from. So that's cool, too. The first one is a tournament that we've been talking about a long time. It's the Pit Dead Zone Tournament Desolation from our friend Ben Alexander. And he has shown off the prizes. And he's got the first place, second place, and third place, plus Wooden Spoon and Best Painted, I believe, are all here. The first place is a 24-karat gold-plated name tag. Second place is a silver one, and third place is a bronze. And then the Wooden Spoon is Medic Alert one, so they're red with the Medic symbol on them, which I think is hilarious. And then the painted ones are just silver, but they have like a groovy colored, what do they call that around to make them so they don't clink together on dog
tags? Yeah, that rubber ring.
Yeah. So that's cool. Like I think that's a genius way of doing the prizes. And he got them all made. And I think that is so much cooler than getting a statue or even although the Adepticon ones with the 3-ups was cool too, but this is such a unique thing to do dog tags. So that's pretty awesome. And, yeah, that's the Pit Dead Zone Tournament in England. We talked about it last month, and you can get all the details in that last episode. And there's also was a tournament in Bali at the Green School. There's a Jesse Driver ran a 28-person tourney for his school. So this is the biggest Dead Zone tournament in the world. And it was 46 games in 2 days of Dead Zone. And in the Plague won, and the Veerman came second. And that's pretty awesome. He's getting all his kids playing Dead Zone in Bali. And there's a picture of it, and they're all playing like in an outside pagoda kind of thing. And that must be the most amazing way to play Dead Zone.
Yeah, I think this is the second time he's run this tournament. I remember last year, mm-hmm. and I see him pictures of just kids. I don't know how old they are. You know, it's hard to guess. Kids go from babies to like gross teenagers, and there's a blur in between for me. I don't care for kids. I don't pay attention to kids, but I don't know, maybe 10, 11 years old, there was pictures of these kids playing Dead Zone. I thought it was great.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And it's great to see that he's bringing the Dead Zone love all the way to Bali. I think he's dis-cheeching there, so it's great. And I have no idea anything about Bali, like why he's there or what the environment's like there, but other than I know it's nice, but It's cool to see them playing that there. And that about wraps it up for the news section. We'll be back. We do have a special guest coming up next, and that's the guys from Winged Hussar and Z-Mach Books. They're doing some stuff with Mantic, so we'll find all about that after this musical interlude. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Perfect.
Hello, this is Martin. Fashion, t-shirts, mugs. Dead Zone, the podcast.
Hi, this is Ronnie. Get on down and listen to the Dead Zone podcast. It's amazing.
And welcome back to Dead Zone the podcast. And with me, as always, my faithful friend, Rob.
Hello, yep. And we're here with some special guests. And we do have the people from Winged Hussar Publishing. We've got Brandon and Vince on the line. And introduce yourselves, guys.
Well, I'm Vince Rossbaugh. I'm the head bottle washer and publisher at Winged Hussar. And with me is Brandon.
Yep, I'm Brandon Rossbaugh. I am the head editor for Z-Mach Publishing, our fantasy and science fiction imprint.
Cool. Yeah, we're going to ask about that, why it's two different things, but you have your own imprint for that?
Yes, we do two different... Well, it's basically because Winged Hussar itself is history, primarily focused on history and military history, and Z-Mach is focused on science fiction, fantasy, action, adventure, and horror. So that's sort of the literary side of it, things.
Yeah, I was checking out your webpage, and it did all the history ones. Those are like actual historical books, not fiction, right? They're all nonfiction?
Correct. Yep, all nonfiction. Primarily, Winged Hussar is they're well written historical scholarly works, but they're also sort of written with a wink towards gamers. Because a lot of the stuff that we put out will have information on armies, uniforms, organization, things that gamers can use. But we do cover a gamut of things, but that's basically the focus we have.
Cool. And we're getting ahead of ourselves. I was going to ask first, how'd you guys get started in all this publishing business?
Well, I think it's my fault, primarily. I've been in publishing for over 20 years. I worked for a variety of very big publishers that are like Simon & Schuster and other big publishers like Games Workshop's Black Library imprint, where I was in charge of sales and marketing and helping to get that going. And then after we parted ways, I got off on my own and decided I wanted to take the things I used and start developing books for gamers.
Nice. And we didn't get into it, but you guys are related. Is that correct?
Yes, we are. I am the father and he is the son.
Yeah, so you dragged your son into the business?
Yeah, well, he's been pretty much since I've been working in publishing, he's been hanging out in publishing offices.
Yeah, so, I mean, I grew up hanging out in the Simon & Schuster office in New York. From there, I hung out with Dan Abnett and Mike Lee and Clint Werner and all the fun authors there numerous occasions. I've pretty much been surrounded by books, and I thoroughly enjoy role-playing games, so I got really into story development and character development, all that good stuff. So I've pretty much always had an interest in writing and reading, and just kind of all coalesced perfectly together.
Very good. I like that. I like that. So you're going to be involved with Mantic now. That's why we're talking to you right now. What brought that on? How did this come about?
Well, it's actually a culmination of a long courting process between us. I actually have known Ronnie for quite a number of years, probably over 10 years. We both worked together at Games Workshop at one point, and I've been supportive of, you know, when he started Mantic years ago, and always following it. And then when we started doing our thing with publishing, you know, I approached him and tried to talk to him about, you know, letting us publish novels with him. And we went back and forth because he's a busy guy and I'm a busy guy. And it took us a while to sort of sit down and be able to iron things out. But we finally did I think it was the late summer. And since then, we've been working on developing a pub schedule and getting authors in place and what we need to do to get things going. So we just also just made a move from people who were distributing us over to Simon Schuster as our distributors. So it grants us a lot better access to the marketplace. And all those things sort of came together at one time, and that's where we are now.
Yeah, I saw your post on Facebook. You were showing off your books are now in bookstores all around.
Yes. Yeah. I actually just went to my local Barnes & Noble, and I've been every time I go in there, I always look for our stuff just to see if it's available, because they do have access to our library. They've had access to our library for years. But only the top branded, science fiction, fantasy, or history stores would carry our product. And I just so happened to find the manager of the Barnes & Noble that is close to us, and I talked to him. He ordered our books on the spot, put it right on the end cap, dead center. In the middle of the Dungeons & Dragons stuff and above all the World of Warcraft stuff. So that was a nice little achievement, being able to see our stuff dead center on an end cap.
Yeah, that's awesome. Get that distribution.
Definitely. And then once we get our Kings of War anthology out, I plan on going back and making sure that's right in the middle as well.
Yeah, we've actually had some decent success getting them into, for instance, Barnes & Noble in New York's been carrying them for a while in with their other game related books. But we like to think the thing we always say we're not just books about gaming. We're producing good books, quality fiction for people.
Yeah, that said, one of our authors, Scott Washburn, he does our All Quiet on the Martian Front series, which is kind of like a spiritual follow up to War of the Worlds. He's done, I think, 3 or 4 signings at his local Barnes & Noble, and those books sell fantastically. So our stuff is out there. It's just now that we have Simon Schuster as our distributor, it's more widely accessible, and we're starting to see it more more different bookstores and more frequently.
Yeah, it's cool. That's going to be interesting to get that kind of exposure for Mantic stuff, too, now that you guys are working with them. And you did say you have the Kings of War book coming out soon. When is that coming out?
The first one is an anthology, which is going to be out in June.
Oh, that's great. That's coming right up. So, and that's just, like you say, an anthology, a bunch of short stories in the Kings of War universe. Is it all different writers or the same writer? Or who wrote all that?
So I think we've got about 10 different writers. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Brian? Yeah. We have 10 authors that are publishing the stories. Usually when we try to kick off our big tabletop tie-ins with fan submission anthologies. So that way we can round out all the different factions, and we can bring in fans of the community, so that way they can see and write a whole scope of the universe. With Kings of War, we decided to keep it a closed anthology for the first one because of the way that Mantic wanted to set it up and wanted to tie in with the latest expansion. I wanted to handpick the authors and the scenarios that we were writing about in the novel. So it ties very closely with the scenarios in the Kings of War rulebook, but I've tweaked some of the factions that are battling each other for a little bit more variety. So I made sure there are 20 factions, more or less, and we have 2 factions with an author. Some of the factions overlap themselves, like the Abyssal Demons will keep reappearing in different short stories, and that's the main tie-in we were trying to get. but all the authors that we have in this anthology have either published something with us in the past or going to publish something with us, and they range in what they cover. So like I said, Scott Washburn, who's our head author on our All Quiet on the Martian Front series, he did a short story on the League of Rordia versus the Ratkins. We have a couple of our Beyond the Gates of Antares writers who did various short stories. And then just some other authors who we've used for different projects who have all also written short stories. And myself, my dad and I actually both wrote short stories as well. So we try to get, we have about maybe 30 or 40 authors in our banks to work with right now. And we try to keep it a very diverse crew and covering all aspects that we can.
That's cool. Yeah. It's good to get a bunch of different writers. So Formantic has had they did do an anthology, a couple anthologies now, of all their different games with fan submitted stuff, and then they have one official book for the Warpath universe at least. But so far, it's the writing talent is kind of limited. Whereas it's good to have a great bunch so you know who's good at doing what, and you can put them on the right story and that kind of stuff.
Oh, definitely. I'll tell you, one of our authors by the name of Robert Waters, when he heard that we were working with Mantic, he immediately jumped on that he wanted to do a Dreadball game. He said immediately, please let me do a Dreadball game. I have a novel. I have all the workings ready to go, and that's just the one thing I want to work on. So lo and behold, one of the novels that we have planned is he's got a whole Dreadball novel. I mean, taking place in the Warpath universe, but focused primarily on Dreadball and a Dreadball team.
That's cool. It's just a little story he's got. That's a full-length novel?
Yep, that's going to be a full-length novel. And we'll get into that a little bit later. I've got some synopsises I can tease your listeners with.
Cool, yeah. What else would you want to ask, Jack? Is there anything you have on your mind?
Well, it was kind of covered, but I'm going to just ask again. When you come in and do something like this and you have to deal with an established IP, is that much more difficult than just say we're going to write some stories that – you know, we feel like we've got a story in our heart. We got to get it out. How hard is it when you have to write for an established world, a built world?
Well, so it's got you. Okay, you can take this.
So it really all depends on it's company by company. We see different results. So some companies keep us limited to this is what we want you to cover. Don't touch any of these aspects. Certain companies will say these named characters we've already put in the rule books, we don't want touched at all. These are off limits. While companies like Mantic have said, please use our named characters, give them some more life, give them some more stories. We're looking to see if you guys can create any heroes that we can use. Every company is different with how they want to handle things. Mantic has been really great and really awesome to wanting to work with us as much as possible. Ronnie at Mantic Knight at Adepticon said that everything that we write will be canon. And we've been, you know, with all these companies, we work very closely to make sure that what we write represents the company to the best of its ability. So everything that I've gone back and forth with the Kings of War anthology with a couple of the guys involved. And, you know, we make sure that what we're writing is matches what they have in mind, make sure that it matches the flow of how they want things. Make sure it accurately represents the game. That said, when we come up with novel ideas, we kind of, you know, an author will come to us and say, well, I've got this great idea taking place in this universe. And, you know, we'll send it over to the company and say, okay, do these core concepts seem to match up with what the general scope of the universe is? And, you know, anything that they say, well, that part doesn't really make sense, we'll go and we'll tweak it to make sure that it better fits. But for the most part, our authors just kind of come to us and say, hey, I've got this great idea. We work with the company and the author together to make sure that we can put out a novel in that universe that fits the lore as well as tells a great story.
I think the thing to keep in mind, too, is in these type of a situation like this where we've got an established company and an established IP, they've done a lot of the hard work in setting up the rules. It's like it's a great toy box that we can play in. At the end of the day, all the toys got to go back in the box in some form. But right. At least it gives us a guideline to go by. And from that standpoint, it's been really good working with them because they give us a lot of leeway in what we can and can't do.
Yeah, and I mean, every work is kind of – it's a work in progress. You know, we might see things one way and it might come across one way, and then we realize it's not quite – as we think. And so we tweak our craft as we go along writing these novels in the universe to make sure, you know, one of my big things is as head editor is I make sure that everything stays consistent within the universe. I have, with every series that we have, I have codexes of information that I keep organized of this is how we spell this. Mm-hmm. This is what's capitalized. This is what's lowercase. This is how this terminology was used. This is how this unit was used. And I make sure that everything stays consistent within the universe itself. And, you know, universe versus universe, there's different things that will change. One of the biggest issues from a grammatical standpoint that I have in moving forward with Kings of War is that, you know, you have factions that are all capitalized in the rulebook because that makes sense. You know, the factions should all be capitalized to make them all stand out. But when you're writing in a novel form, it gets a little glaring when every faction stands out like elves and men and dwarves. So I've had to go and tweak, you know, these certain factions should be capitalized. These certain factions should be lowercase. Now, meanwhile, in our Antari series, all of those factions correspond to primarily a different planet. So those all get capitalized. So it's interesting from a grammatical standpoint to see how all in different game systems, it all shares the same English language, but different words get capitalized, different words get lowercase. And that's why I have these codexes of information that I pass along to the authors and say, this is the standard. This is our writing standard. This is how we stay consistent.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, to keep everything continuity-wise too, I'm sure, to make sure that, you know, people in one book getting killed in another book, that kind of stuff.
Well, that's the interesting thing about, like, primarily Antares and Kings of War and Warpath, is that the universes are so large. The science fiction universes are so large, and in Kings of War, the continent is so big, you really don't see too much crossover between stories unless we want to have some type of crossover. So while this might happen in Book A, those characters might never see any other characters in any of the other books we publish. So unless we want to keep some writer crossover, the character stories are pretty much constrained to their own book. While there might be overlasting ramifications that occur out of those books, the characters usually stay in their own novels. Now, we worked with Wild West Exodus on a couple novels, and that was a big thing of trying to make sure that those characters all crossed over, because that game is more based off, it's a skirmish hero game. So, you know, you had all those heroes coming and going in the different novels. And so that was a big one where, you know, if a character died, they stayed dead.
Yeah, that's important, especially reading a series. You don't want all of a sudden characters showing up that died like two books ago. And I guess that's an issue with Warpath much farther down the line, where you have a bunch of books and you can start cross-pollinating more. As the world gets built up and you have events happening, that's when things have to be referenced and stuff like that, I guess.
Definitely. And, you know, our authors are all our authors are a really great bunch of guys where if we do want to have events cross over, our authors have worked together in the past just making sure that their ideas all flow. We have a really great author community where two of our authors, Scott Washburn and Mark Barber. Mark is doing our first Antares novel. They worked together to kind of create the lore we had on one of the factions to make sure that everything made sense. In the Kings of War anthology, there was a couple of our authors who worked together to make sure that they had some cross factions. So they went, I said, well, this person's doing this and this person's doing this. So they actually went and they talked to each other to make sure that their stories were linking up properly. So we have a really great author community in that, like, I'm confident that when we get to that point where stories start coming together, it's going to go great.
That's great. That's why I'm a old BattleTech fan from back in the day, and all their books are like that. And that's the kind of thing I love to see, is the universe get expanded out. And sure, you have each individual stories, but really Warpath is limited in its fluff. Really, there's a one big source book I'm sure you have that gives most of the information, but generally you have a pretty wide canvas to start building on there.
Well, yeah, and the important thing on that too is, you know, we're hoping that we'll help develop some of the background and some information that's going to feed back into the game, both in people and scenarios and situations. So we'll try to backfill some of the history as well.
Definitely. And what we like to do when we're doing, you know, these novels for tabletop games is we would like to help get people interested in the miniature. So like in the stories, we try to, you know, as much as we try to focus on character development and individual stories, we also really like to focus on the overarching battles. We like to have battles that people can create, that they can read and go, oh, wow, I really want to buy that army so that way I can recreate that battle with my friends. And, you know, we really get into the specifics of the different units and the different types to make sure that everybody is represented properly. So people, like fans of one unit, can be like, oh, wow, that unit was, you know, nobody I know plays that unit, but they're represented in this novel. That's really cool. So we, as much as we're trying to tell good stories, we also like to help the game and help promote the models and help get people interested in playing.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I love the idea of cross-pollinization, too. You guys start creating characters, so they become mercs or heroes in the game. That'd be really cool. And you said you had some synopsis of some of the Warpath books that are going to be coming out?
Definitely. So I have three synopsises. Let me just get the dates.
So most of these novels are coming out in for this, I believe, is 2019.
Yes.
Yep, so next year, that's not too long.
Okay.
Now, so, and the reason is it just takes a while to get these things, you know, programmed in and filtered into the selling cycle that, for retailers, mm-hmm. which is usually 6 months to a year ahead. And, you know, we wanted to make sure we had the right group of people on board for that, as well as, you know, we're starting to build up the schedule and build up the information about it.
Yeah. So these novels are going to be coming fast and furious, like back to back to back in the Warpath universe. We've already got some Kings of War novels scheduled, as I've briefly talked about. The anthology is first coming out next month for that. And then we have a couple novels slated down the line. But Warpath is going to see a lot of love at the end of 2019. Starting in September, we have the, Dreadball novel that I talked about before. It's called The Last Hurrah, by Robert E. Waters. And Robert has been with us pretty much since the inception of our company. He has worked on every single project that we have. He's a very experienced author. He's worked on plenty of other stuff besides us. And he, like I said, he's put a lot of love into this story. So he gave me the synopsis that goes as follows. The Last Hurrah will showcase a number of characters in and around a corporation human minor league team trying to enter a major league tournament sponsored by the Tron Tech Corporation. The team's owner and general manager, the third son of a wealthy corporate mogul, has something to prove to himself, his father, and the Galactic Co-Prosperity Sphere. The black sheep of the family, he's been given a warning. Shape up, do right by the family and by your name, or be cut off. This is his last chance to prove that he can do something with his life. So he takes it upon himself to reform the team into, hopefully, a powerhouse that can win a seat at the big boys' table. If he can win the tournament, his team will most certainly be admitted to the majors. His new coach is the once-famous human striker, Lieburn Weiss, name might change, who is spending his retirement wasting away playing extreme dreadball in dark streets and back alleys to earn money for booze, for women, and for whatever else he can use to drive himself into an early grave. For you see, Lieburn, in the prime of his career and in a fit of rage, killed his twin brother, Victor Weiss, in a championship game when Lieburn was on the Tron Tech 29ers and Victor was on the opposing team. Lieburn used the ball as a weapon and took Victor out, and then, realizing the terrible deed, left the game forever and never looked back. Now, he wants to die, but our team owner is giving Lieburn a second chance. He's too old and too banged up to play professionally, but he can still coach. Lieburn takes the job, if for no other reason but to earn better booze money. From this point on, the novel will focus on the events surrounding the building of the new team and the preparation for the tournament. Other players, coaches will come into play as opposing perspectives will be showcased. In addition, there's bad blood between the owner of our team and Trontech's young CEO, who used to be friends but are now bitter enemies. Trontech actually tried to keep our team out of the tournament, but was overruled in the courts. So there will be a lot of attempted backstabbing and off-court shenanigans that will place enormous pressure on our team. In the middle of all this, our coach, Lieburn Weiss, is simply trying to take it day by day and build a coaching staff and dreadball roster that can compete against his old team, the Trontech 29ers, the Green Moon Smackers, the Void Sirens, the Chromium Chargers, the Kopputki Colossals, and many others in a 64-team mega tournament where the stakes are very high. Through grit, good coaching, expert play, and a lot of luck, our team will make it to the finals. But injuries and deaths will compel Lieburn Weiss to put on the dreadball suit and play once again. Can his body take the punishment, and can his spirit be kept high enough to repel him the victory? This is his last hurrah, and he has to make it count for himself and for his brother. And that one will be out, I think I mentioned, in September. November, we have a novel called Luck Dragon by our author Clayton Conduff. He wanted to keep it kind of vague. He didn't want to give out too much information yet. He's still playing around with ideas. But he gave me a short paragraph to go off of, which is, a humble maintenance man must rise to meet the challenge of a catastrophic event on the sprawling city-sized space station where he lives and works. He wants the novel to have a very personal feel, less about the giant war narrative and more about characters existing in the unfathomably large system that is the GCPS. Like I said, he's still kind of working out the details, but Clayton has been in this industry for a long, long time. He knows every person that works behind the scenes and all the different games. We kind of met out of a whim. I messaged him after I saw him on an Antares forum, and then I found out that we had all these connections, and he's actually been supporting us since we first came into the publishing industry. So he's started working with us on Kings of War, Antares, and now Warpath. So he's looked forward to some awesome stuff from him. And then scheduled sometime perhaps in January of 2020, we have Mark DeSantis with his novel Project Iridium. Mark has worked with us on Antares, Kings of War. He did a short story on the forces of nature and the Basilians versus the forces of Abyss in the Kings of War anthology. And he's going to be doing a full novel in Kings of War, scheduled out in actually January of 2019. So Mark's our January writer in 2019 and 2020. And his synopsis is as follows. Lieutenant Ross Elbridge is a member of the GCPS's Weapons Intelligence Service branch of its Military Intelligence Agency. His job is to investigate enemy armament, determine their technical capabilities, and devise methods of how best to combat them. He is no hero, and his behind-the-lines work, in which he has mastered the fine art of doing no more than necessary, suits him well. His current mission is to Ichigo 4, a world city in which forefathers and their enigmatic Asterian allies have battled the military forces of the GCPS to a standstill over several years of bitter urban combat. Several examples of Forge Father vehicles have been recovered in various states of damage or disrepair. Elbridge reconstructs the machines and tests them to uncover their strengths and weaknesses. Intelligence comes of a downed Asterian Spectra escort gunship that can be virtually recovered intact in a jungle region of the planet. It is an unparalleled opportunity to obtain an advanced example of Asterian technology for study, but worryingly, it is deep behind enemy lines. Elbridge is torn from his cushy rear area assignment and sent to retrieve it alongside a unit of Rangers. Time is of the essence, as the GCPS High Command on Ichigo 4 has decided to go forward Operation Iridium, its long-awaited offensive in the area. The veteran Rangers have little respect for the combat inexperienced and courage-challenged Elbridge and are of little assistance as he attempts to recover the gunship. Major trouble arrives in the form of an Asterian ambush, which results in the abandonment of the gunship and a hazardous trek to the jungle. It is while the GCPS survivors make their way through the jungle that they come upon three dormant war machines of unknown alien manufacture hidden within the dense vegetation. Each is uncrewed, but sentient, and they reawaken as fighting engendered by the GCPS offensive nears them. These war machines, codenamed Alpha, Beta, and Gamma by Elbridge, add an entirely unpredictable element to the war for Ichigo. Each unit is protected by immensely resilient shields and meters-thick armor. Their weaponry is plentiful and astonishingly powerful. When GCPS forces attack the machines, they are thrashed by disintegrator beam cannons, antimatter particular missiles, and gravatic accelerators. The machines also demonstrate real-time matter manipulation and are able to fashion new weapons to meet unexpected challenges. There are several orders of magnitude more sophisticated than anything to be found on the arsenals of the major factions of the Warpath universe. The Forge Fathers and Asterians have no control over the actions of these war machines, but use the devastation that they cause to launch their own counteroffensive against the now overextended GCPS armies. One army is surrounded and trapped inside one of the megacologies that covers much of the planetary surface. In the dramatic conclusion of the story, Elbridge must be an unwilling hero and make common cause with an Asterian scientist to come up with means of stopping the war machines before they destroy the escaping remnants of the GCPS army on Ichigo 4. Now, granted, I should also mention that we're still working with Mantic to make sure that these synopses all are okay and they all work, but I figured we'd give a little bit of tease while we were on your podcast and the Third Sphere, so that way listeners know what to expect. And also in 2020, if there's enough interest and if, you know, listeners reach out to us and let us know, we can always do a Warpath anthology fan submission if there's enough interest for it.
That's awesome. I love how they're all different genres. So you're covering everything. It's same universe, but it's all different stories. You get small stories, you get big stories. You get like war stories or just sports stories. I like how it's the variety is already being built up.
Exactly. We try to cover a variety of different topics and areas. So that way there's something for everybody to read. You know, one of the things when we were at Adepticon, we stopped and played a game of Antares because that's one of the novels we publish in. And there was a gentleman that said, "Oh, wow, you have two anthologies out. Well, once you get to five or six, then I'll start buying them." And it's like, okay, I understand the point of that. So once you give us a little bit of time to build up our repertoire of library of novels, there'll be something for everybody. There's going to be something that everybody of every age can find interest in. If they enjoy the game, you'll enjoy the novels that we produce.
Well, I'm nearly done the Wild West Exodus book, the Abundant Riches.
Oh, right.
And if I am thoroughly enjoying it, and if that same world building and the same care is put into writing a good story that happens to be in the game world, then I'm on board. I'm all in. And I think that will really, really resonate with the people who are fans of Mantic's stuff. Mantic, I think the world that Mantic's built, good, but it needs the fleshing out.
Well, we'll guarantee that we're going to give the same attention, if not more.
Well, I was just going to say, if you liked what we did in Wild West Exodus, I can guarantee you that this is better. Because with Wild West Exodus, we had a little bit more heavy constraints than some of the other companies we've worked with. So if you like that, you should definitely check out our Antares works, because there you can start to see where just how far we've come in just a short time.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, that sounds good.
Just pick out the Kings of War novel when it comes out.
Also
yeah,
true.
Not too long. Yeah. Another month or so.
Yeah. Yes.
That's good. Yeah, for sure. That's great. And if anybody does want to contact you, I do know you guys have a Facebook group for that you contact. You talk with the fans all the time. So if you just look up Winged Hussar on Facebook, you'll find you guys, right?
Yeah, there's a couple different methods that fans can get in touch with us. We have our main page, Winged Hussar Publishing. That's Winged, W-I-N-G-E-D. Hussar is spelled H-U-S-S-A-R. Winged Hussar Publishing. That's the main page that deals – we post everything there. And then Zamok Books, Z-M-O-K. That specializes in all the fantasy and science fiction stuff. But like I said, Winged Hussar Publishing will also post everything. And then we do have a Facebook group, which is actually Winged Hussar Publishing / Zamok Books. If you look up Winged Hussar, you'll find it. And we actually tried doing forums at first, but it was a little bit more chaotic than what I remember, because I used to run Envision Free forums back in the day. I had a whole slew of different ones. But that's kind of gone to the wayside, and it's been a little bit more chaotic than what I've seen in the past. So we actually decided to do a Facebook group because that seems to work a little bit better. So fans of our series can go there, and they can directly talk to our authors, us working in the company, and other people that share similar interests. So it's a great forum to be able to talk to anybody anybody in our publishing industry.
And we do promise if you ask us a question, we will get back to you.
Speedy time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. No, that's I see that you guys are really approachable. You guys, you're not the hands off type of publisher. You guys, you'll take the comments and suggestions and take it to heart, which is great.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is, we're not some sort of big impersonal corporation. We're a very small group, but we do take what we're working on very seriously. We're very passionate about it. So, you know, obviously there are reasonable things you can talk to us about. And sometimes people get a little bit too caught up in the things that they're excited about. And, you know, I understand that too, but you know, there's a limit to what we can do on that end too, but we'll always try and interact as best we can.
Yeah,
definitely.
There's always the crazy fans, but that's they're your lifeblood in the end. So
yes. Yeah.
But also, we'll have you guys back on once it gets closer to the publication of the Warpath books and talk about them more, because I'm sure you'll have more information to give us. And it's been great having you on. I think that covers most of it. Is there anything else you can think of, Jack?
No, that's good. That we got a nice little taste. We're going to let all the people who listen know that what's coming out, that it's going to be very soon for Kings of War, but We're looking for the Warpath books, and we'll make sure that everyone knows as the information you have, give it to us, and we'll make sure a lot of people know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'll count on it. And, you know, just so you know, we do – all our distribution does extend to Canada, so we'll be up there as well and available to you.
That's great. I don't know how many Dead Zone fans are in Canada, but we might be the only ones. But
it's all right. We still want to cater to everyone.
That's right.
Definitely. And that said, you know, as I mentioned before, if the fans of the series have anything they'd like to see from us, you could always reach out to us, and we can always, you know, if we get enough suggestions, we can go and say, hey, people want to see this. Let's try to write a novel about this. You know, mm-hmm. a certain faction that's not represented properly and people want to see more fleshed out. We can always work with that. And like I said, if there's enough call for a fan submission anthology, we're more than willing to do that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It just the idea that you can say, hey, I want to maybe do more books about Rebs or more books about Marauders or something. You can start getting that ideas flowing. And it sounds like Definitely. You guys have enough writers to cover that if it's popular enough. So people, you have to buy the books to make sure that we get more of these books coming out.
Definitely.
Well, thank you, Brandon and Vince. It's been great having you on. And we'll take a little break here. We'll be back for some more Dead Zone, the podcast.
Thanks thank you, guys.
Much. Thanks, gents.
This is Rob Enough from Countercharge, and when I need my Dead Zone fix, there's only one podcast I turn to, and that's Dead Zone, the podcast.
And welcome back. That was an excellent interview we had there. We learned a lot, and we look forward to, in the future, keeping in touch. And also, now I know where to send all my Crazy Bobby fanfic that they can publish.
That would be disturbing. I don't know if that's, they don't publish those kind of stories, Jack.
Well, you never know. The quality is there. It doesn't matter. Once you get immersed in my world of Crazy Bobby and his sexual prowess, you can't help.
It's like the old games, Leisure Suit Larry, but with Crazy Bobby.
Very much so. Very much so.
Yes. Thank you to Brandon and Vince from Winged Hussar. That's really great of those guys. And I'm sure you'll be hearing more of those from those guys in the future on our show.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to it.
So let's get into some Patreon shoutouts. We have some new Patreon backers. And don't forget, if you're back on Patreon, you have a chance to win in our contest a couple of Hornets. So please, If you feel free to jump onto Patreon, even just for a few months to get into that contest, we'd appreciate it. And our first new patron is Mark Dieter. And thank you, Mark. And then the second one is Chris Larson. Both you guys, thanks for joining us on the Patreon. Thanks for joining the Nameless Tops Hats and Monocles Club. It's a pleasure to have you in the group.
Yes, and hopefully you joined because you're part of the community and you want to be involved and you've enjoyed the show, and not that you just want some sweet, sweet plastic prize, some hornet loving. I hope, because that's a bit dirty.
I'm fine with it. Oh. Also, okay. Don't forget, you can email us for that contest at deadzonepodcast@gmail.com with the subject hornets, and just let us know what your favorite topic, or not topic, but section of the show is. And we'll add you into that contest. You have a chance. So if you're not a Patreon member, you have a chance of one hornet, and the Patreon members have got a chance of two. So thank you, everyone. And let's move on to some shout-outs. You're not going to yell out shout-outs?
No. I almost went into a wintergreen shout-outs time, but I think it's in poor taste considering Wintergreen's health is failing, and it just seemed like mockery.
I thought he was already dead, so it's pretty good that he's just failing health.
Oh, no.
Was that insensitive? I'm sorry.
Very insensitive. That's all right. I was just gonna lambaste you for your poor etiquette. But no, go on with our song and dance show. Let's keep entertaining everyone.
Yes, our first shout out is to Brian Novak, who we met at AdeptCon. He's goes by Archimedes on Discord. I believe that's how you pronounce it. If not, Brian, let us know. And Brian did make one of the coolest things I've ever seen. He made a crazy Gundam-like strider. It's got swords, it's got shields, it's got horns. This thing is cray-cray, and he's awesome. And he magnetized it up. And, yeah, I love it when people modify their striders, and this one is... It's still a strider. It's got all strider bits, but he's got new hands on it. He's got, like I said, he added some horns to the shoulders and a big fin on the head. And a big shield with looks like three grenade launchers on the arm. I just wish that we can modify the stats to be able to use like all this stuff.
The shield and the sword would just be the breaching tool. Like it'd be easy to do. But, is this particular robot here a thing, or is it a new creation? Like, I'm not in the world of robots like you. Is this like a mock-up of, say, one of those Japanimation shows you liked?
Japanimation. Are you living in the 80s?
Damn right I am.
I believe it's more inspired by those shows, not so much an actual mock-up of one. Now, it could be wrong. I don't know everyone, but I think it's inspired by anime and Gundams and big giant stompy robots that we love.
Yes.
But he is awesome. So thanks, Brian. Please keep up the good work. We'd like to see more. The next shout out is to Jacek Mikulski. And he did some Plague, and he did them very similar to in the book with the bubblegum and all that, but he did a really nice job on these guys. I like the stark white on them. I think it's even more stark than in the studio Plague guys, but it's nice to see the Plague, especially stage ones. Those stage ones are still the best model I think Mantic makes. It's probably arguable now because there's some really nice models out there, but I love that stage one.
Iconic.
Yeah. And that head and that face, like he does look, every time I look at him, he does remind me of, what was that TV show with, that cartoon with the guy with the skull face?
That would be He-Man and Skeletor.
No, not Skeletor. That good cartoon.
Did you say the He-Man wasn't good?
Skullface. Isn't his name Skullface in the cartoon? I can't remember.
Oh, Frisky Dingo.
Frisky Dingo. Anybody who hasn't seen Frisky Dingo, go watch Frisky Dingo, because the main villain It looks just like a stage one.
If at some point mumbling and pushing a bowl off a counter doesn't bring joy to your heart, then you're dead inside.
That's right. And lastly, we have Chris Evans, just off of his work on Avengers Infinity War. But here he's making some great, really amazing, huge Dead Zone terrain. And he has a blog that he will have the link to that he shows how he made it all. And it's vaultoftheundead.wordpress.com, and then you can find it in there. So he did this. He did a big wall of the fortified terrain, which looks great, with the gate. And then he did like a base sort of with the, in a round, well, I guess not quite round, but a large shape that you can put as a base. We're just saying how in our introductory thing, how you shouldn't make large structures, but I think this looks awesome. It's actually taking up with the two, he also has some two like keeps that connect to it. It takes up pretty much two Dead Zone mats.
Well, because you can, it's sitting on the Dead Zone mat and you know each square is 3 inches and you know how big you can see just how giant that wall is.
Yeah.
Like that is an immense piece of terrain.
Yeah. And then the, base, it's pretty cool. And once again, I love seeing the Dead Zone terrain used in creative ways. And I think this looks awesome. It looks like a real base too. It's not just some, sometimes things tend to look like a paintball field in Dead Zone. This looks like an actual operating base that you could actually fortify. And that does it for the shoutouts. If anybody else has any things they'd like to show off, please either email it to us or tag us in your Facebook posts or some other way to contact us. Jack favors carrier pigeons. So yes, anyway, send us the pictures. Yes, you'll send it. He'll bring the pictures and then he'll eat the birds. It's a one way trip for these birds.
Yes, but you know, circle of life.
And we'll move on to our stuff, Jack. Please tell me you've done something. It's been so long.
Not a goddamn thing.
What have you been doing with your time?
Working.
Oh, well, I've been putting together hornets. We may have gotten a windfall of hornets. We did get some prize support from Mantic. And then we got the two hornets we were getting from Adepticon came in. And then our Warpath pledge came in. So we have like a literal windfall of hornets right now. So I made up two. I made up one of the normal GCPS with the landing skids down. And I put in the general in the back to show the scale of it. And then I did the plague version. In the plague one, I ripped off the doors and put all the spiky bits all over it. And it's a really nice model. It's really fun to put together. Really well done. Pat does have a link of a video he did showcasing how to put these guys together. So if you need some help, but it's pretty self-explanatory. It is just helpful for organization, I'd say, mostly.
It's just helpful to have the dulcet tones of Community Pat to just talk you through, to hold your hand, say, come on, buddy. He just lifts his arm, puts it over your shoulder and says, come with me. It'll be all right. And it is.
And I do have a comparison shot here of the Enforcer Flyer and the GCPS one. I thought the GCPS one would be a lot smaller. It's taller and maybe not as long, but it's comparable size. It's quite a beast of a kit. So if you're not going to win one of these, I'd get your hands on one anyways, because it is a really cool flyer. It looks like a bulldog.
With a skull face front.
Yes. Yeah, you should paint it like a skull. That's a good idea.
I'm just eyeballing your workstation here. I see the Dead Zone mug in the background. I see the... our friends, yeah, Gorilla Glue, but our friends at Counter Charge, their mascot peeking over some cables, but most importantly, what appears to be a Vinland old time radio mouse pad that has seen better days.
That's an old school mouse pad right there. We've had that for probably 10 years. So
yeah,
yes, I use it as a place to put my stuff so it doesn't fall off when I'm trying to assemble things. I also did another project, Jack, which I've been teasing for a long time. This is only part one because this was the reheading of our orcs from our marauders. This part one is just the marauders we already had painted up. I ripped off all their heads and stuck on all the new puppets war heads on these guys. And they are a little small, but I think they work with the... it just makes them look cartoony, but evil, because they're like gas-masked Nazi heads on these big brooding orcs.
Some of them work really well, and some of them a little less, but the overall aesthetic is better, in my opinion, than the original. We've never been fans of the Marauders look in Mantic's world, and now we might start showing them a little more love, that they have gas masks and, Russian hats to,
Yeah, some of them are the Nazi, like, helmets, and then there's the flat caps with gas masks, which I did for the leaders, and then the all the special characters, which are the two, what do they call, Ripper suits, and the skyscraper. I gave Russian winter hats, the fur ones with the flaps with the gas mask, and I think they look pretty cool. And I also did a special character in tribute to my new best friend, and that's Boomer. I did Boomer. And Boomer's head, I was going to keep his regular head, but that thing, it was an old metal sculpt back in the day, and the head was either miscast or just the worst sculpt I've ever seen on a head. He looked like he had been hit with a shovel, like literally. It was flat, and his eyes were about 3 feet apart. So I ripped that off and gave him I gave him one of the Russian gas masks heads, and I think it pretty works with him. Like, the scale on him is pretty good, because he's the little goblin heads, or he's a hobgoblin. It's bigger than to scale, so I think it worked really good with them. So in general, my reheading projects, I think, is turning out pretty good. I'm pretty happy with them, and like Jack says, I think I actually might play with these guys.
And you're saying this is only the beginning.
Yes, because I did get that booster set from AdeptCon, so I have them all primed. I have to paint those guys up. We'll have another wave of reheaded orcs coming our way to pretty much double our orc size, because we didn't have a very big army before, but now it's going to be quite large. Best thing about these orcs is you can tell how old they are because they're all on clear bases. That's original Dead Zone version 1. That's the only time we ever got orcs. So they're all on clear bases.
Yeah, that seems like a lifetime ago.
It does. It's been about 5 years, I think, at this point. Crazy to think that. Jack, we've been doing the show for like 5 years.
Nonstop. We have not, we only missed one show, I believe. No, that was Vinland Old Time Radio, and that was because we went to Adepticon. We might have a perfect record of making sure that there's at least, two shows every month in those 5 years.
It'd be close. I think it might have been one show in some of those months, but still, we still did it. I'm pretty impressed.
If we don't say so ourselves.
Yes. Someone's got to pat our backs.
Well, we get lots of help from, we have fine guests, like Community Pat comes on, and we've had, it's a team effort. We can't say, but it's not 100 yet. We got to save this kind of talk for show 100.
You're right. That's right. We've still got 16 more shows.
So another year.
At least. So if you do like us, go to cafepress.ca/deadzonepodcast. Buy some merch. Buy that merch. It'd be lit.
Ooh.
And also you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/deadzonepodcast. All those things we appreciate. It's not required, and we'll never have any exclusive content, but we will like it, appreciate it if you do come on those. Speaking of content, though, not exclusive content, thanks to our Patreons, we are doing a monthly Dead Zone TV on YouTube live. Are you excited, Jack?
I'm a little scared because I've been saying, hey, Rob, let's do some planning. What are we going to do? Let's do some production value. And he's just like, I got this. So, like, I don't know. This could get...
Well, you should have gotten your sequined outfit in the mail by now, haven't you? I don't want to ruin that. It'll be coming this week. Don't worry.
That's an outfit? I thought you bought me a kerchief.
Oh no, that's to wear, Jack. That's for the live show.
Oh my.
So look forward to that. Shucking and jiving. And, that will be on, May 18th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or whatever it is. I think it is still Standard Time right now. I don't know what the EST and EDT, and I have no idea any of those means. Eastern time, anyways.
If you're Mountain Time or Pacific Time, we adjust accordingly. If you're Greenwich Mean Time, you'll probably be in bed.
But you can always go on YouTube on our Dead Zone podcast YouTube channel. Link will be in the show notes, and you'll find the scheduled show. You have to just, be notified when that starts up. You can come on and watch us try to make an hour show out of nothing. Maybe we'll have guests. Maybe we won't. Maybe it'll just be us picking our noses for an hour. You paid for that, people. I hope you enjoy it.
You reap what you sow.
You did this. It should be a good time. We'll have fun.
Yeah.
So that's coming up soon. So check that out. And it's always going to be available on YouTube afterwards. It becomes just a regular video on YouTube. So you can always check it out later if you can't watch it live. That's a good thing about YouTube. It's one of the few things about YouTube that's good, but that is good. I think that might wrap it up, Jack.
I think so. This was a good one, a long one and an informative one.
Yep. Thanks to the Winged Hussar guys once again. We look forward to the books coming out. And I like – we were talking about it afterwards, Jack. And Jack's like, yeah, I wasn't interested in any of these books. I'm not a fluff guy, but now I might be interested.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's the game fluff was never my thing. It was, but I think there's Mantic can use a little bit of pandering to the people who do, and I think I can get into it. Don't get me wrong, I liked Christopher Verspeek's stuff, but it came so rare. Now you heard them. There's going to be a wave of books coming our way, and that's going to be something new and exciting.
Yep. And Jack is you're enjoying the they do a Wild West Exodus series that you got for at Adeptcon. You're enjoying that, right?
Yeah. So like I'm just imagining what's going to, come to life. Like they said, they've got a little bit of wiggle room to do what they want, and how the synergy between some authors with some forward thinking, really wild out there ideas, and what Mantic's already got as a base, a foundation for real hard sci-fi. It's got real potential to really go some really interesting places.
Yep. So I think that wraps up. So until next time, I've been Rob.
And I'm Jack.
And this has been Dead Zone, the podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on the live show, and then we'll see you for some kind of team building exercise. We're not sure what we're doing yet. changes, and you can't plan around these monkeys. Bye-bye.
Excelsior!
Thank you for listening to the Dead Zone podcast. I have been your announcer, William Randolph Wintergreen. Visit the website, deadzonegame.podbean.com. Email your hosts at deadzonepodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can follow the show at deadzonepodcast. The Dead Zone Podcast is a production of Vinlando Time Radio Productions.